Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 74, TNG, season 1, episode 26, The Neutral Zone.
You and the others were frozen.
Cryonics, you know, it's a freeze you now and heal you later.
Yeah, I've heard of it, I just never gave it much thought. How did we get here?
You were in a space module.
The wacko that sold me this scam said that by putting us in orbit, there wasn't going to be no chance of a brownout.
Yes, several cryonics companies fell into disrepute because of power failures, which adversely affected their refrigeration system. Their stocks were severely depressed.
The whole deal was a long shot, but I figured, well, what the hell? Might as well give them the dough instead of leaving it to my ex-wives. But you know, son, I just figured it was all a bunch of hooey.
Hooey? Huh. As in hogwash, malarkey, jive, an intentional fabrication.
There you go. Now you got it.
Low mileage pit wolfies.
Oh, yeah.
Low mileage. Let's find ourselves a couple of low mileage pit wolfies.
It means prostitutes, right? Sex
yeah,
workers?
Yeah, that would make sense.
Sex workers. Yeah. I think it meant sex workers. I think he wanted to go with Data to meet some... sex workers.
Some that hadn't been around the block too much.
That low were, mileage. Yes, low mileage. And but even Riker pretended to not know what Data was referring to.
He had that grin, but he was like, I don't know,
Data.
Well, when Data was asking Riker about that later, and he's like, "These are the most unusual humans I've encountered." And like, Riker's fucked up. He goes, you know, well, from what I've seen of our guests, there's not much to redeem them. It makes me wonder how our species survived the 21st century. Like, that's fucked up, you know?
It is fucked up. I think that was one of the criticisms of this episode, that there was some heavy, like, sort of moralizing on the whole sort of 21st century kind of thing. Like, oh, they're just kind of superficial, and this guy's just into a bunch of drugs. And
yeah, I thought that
guy had the best attitude, though.
And I thought that was interesting. I wasn't sure what was going on. Yeah, he did have the best attitude.
He was totally adaptable, so that's sort of offensive to that guy, because he was, you know.
Hey, real quick, why don't we note to the audience that they've got it right. They've got it right. They don't need to look at their... look at their podcast machine and think something's wrong. They are listening to the It's Got Star Trek podcast, episode 74. It seems like it should be. Would make sense. Episode 74.
That's the count I have.
In which we are in the midst, currently, in medias res, discussing the Neutral Zone from Star Trek, The Next Generation's first season. It's the season finale. And as we continue our discussion, one piece of context that might be helpful is I learned that this was written, or the story was sort of half written, when the writer's strike hit.
Yeah.
And so they kind of just had to go with their first draft of the story. And most of the people kind of, in retrospect, think that if they had had a few more passes, they had plenty of ideas how they were going to smooth out some of these rough edges.
Yeah, because, that LQ guy, Leon Quaffey, or what was his name?
His real name or the actor's name?
Oh, the actor's name was Leon Rippey.
Yeah.
Yeah, Leon Rippey. So, right, they were talking slightly...
LG Sonny Clemens.
They were talking...
LQ.
I couldn't tell... So the substance abuse issue, yeah, they felt like they kind of talked down to a little when, you know, when Crusher was talking about how his liver was fucked up. Picard's like, he's like, sounds like someone who hated life.
Yeah, he was trying to get pills off a Crusher.
And smacked her in the butt.
He was afraid of death but hated life or something.
Yeah, Crusher goes, too afraid to live, too scared to die. Yeah.
Which is pithy. It's a very 1980s line.
Yeah
and I couldn't tell because I guess, you know, Gene Roddenberry probably had nothing to do with this, but, I mean, he kind of had some drug abuse issues. So,
in fact, he specifically was not permitted to rewrite it because normally at this stage in season one still, he would still take a pass at the scripts or at least take a look at them, and he didn't get to because of the writer's strike.
Okay, so that answers that, because I was like, well, maybe Gene Roddenberry is making some deep comment about his shame or something like that. Wouldn't just like, no, they just had this sort of like fucking look about
it. Was the 80s, it was just say no. It was, you know, they do.
He was unsympathetic towards like any kind of
Leon Krebs. What's his name? Leon Krebs.
Leon Rippey.
Leon Rippey
is the name of the actor.
What's the name of the character? LQ J.K. Simmons.
LQ Sonny Clement. Yes. Sonny Clement.
Yeah, it was close. He comments that, or he asks the question once, basically, of Riker, saying like, "What the hell is it that you guys do here for fun?" And yeah. Riker just sort of smiles and gets up. And,
yeah, that's you know, right.
There's no answer in this episode. Right. I mean, they have holodecks and
right,
things like
exactly,
that.
But, yeah.
Come on, show these people the holodeck.
Yeah,
they'll get it once you show them the holodeck. They'll be like, "Oh, okay."
I mean, so if they're talking about,
I find myself a couple of low mileage pit bulls.
If they're talking about broadcast television, that'll probably go out in 10 years, you know. But they're probably talking about streaming. They're probably including that. But I think we know. Well, we don't know, but virtual reality is a hard time catching on because, and I think part of it is because it's like a pain in the ass. You got to move. Like sometimes people just want to fucking sit down yes. and not have to move. And that's where the holodeck.
People still listen to radio.
Yeah, people. Right. Exactly.
I mean, radio.
So I don't think, I mean, the holodeck will still be around, but like, unless you count, oh, well, they'll just, you know, make a holodeck with someone watching TV, which is like, no, why not just have a TV? You know what I mean? Like yeah. people don't always want to be moving around. And so that's why, yeah, TV doesn't, but maybe it'll die. I don't know.
It's just one of those cute Star Trek predictions that yeah. That one, who knows?
2040.
Yeah, the problem is we'll learn soon whether they were right or wrong. Hopefully, I mean, hopefully we'll make it that far. But maybe we won't make it out of the 21st century because we're such evil
is
heathens.
That what, is yeah. that what you calculated that those people were from, like the 2040s?
No, well, they Data mentions that TV ends in 2040.
These people, TV ends.
Yeah, the people are from around 1988 because yeah. 370 years
yeah
and then the year is 2364.
They're actually from the 80s. They're okay. actually from the 80s and, yeah. and
that, well that's pretty good then, because except for the country guy is this ridiculous sort of cartoon of somebody that doesn't really exist, didn't exist in the 80s really.
Yeah.
You know, somebody from like the earlier days of music, but
yeah, what was he said? He's like, these old boys here don't need us telling them where the bear sits.
Yeah.
And then in that same yeah. scene, he goes, hey, now these folks don't need us swimming in their soup.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like from a Disney movie or something.
Hey now.
Okay.
Swimming
well,
in their soup.
So, again, we're doing the podcast a bit backwards. But it doesn't matter. People did their homework. They watched the episode. They don't need an explanation. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We'll do the odds and ends now. No, I was just going to say that, of course, the premise of this episode is similar to Space Seed from TOS, in the sense that they come across some spaceship that has people from the 20th century-ish, and they're in cryopods. These folks, of course, don't turn out to be murderous, genetically engineered superhumans.
But Riker was judging...
But they could be.
But Riker was still judging them. Like, when Riker was judging them, Claire hadn't done anything wrong.
Exactly. Like, good
you
point
couldn't even...
bringing it back to that, because she had been nothing but pleasant and
yeah.
mildly upset at being... flung nearly 400 years
and,
in the future.
She was surprised that she had died because the other guys had terminal conditions. They knew they were dying, but she was all like, what? I died? What?
Yeah, she didn't even know she had died. Well, and also she had a perfect opportunity to take advantage of the starship, because when Troy had her going through the computer to look through her genetic history, what's that called? It's a genealogy. Troy put in her credentials and then gave it over to her, and Troy left the room. So Troy left... An officer, a Starfleet officer, put their credentials in a computer and gave it to some stranger. Yeah, and she totally
security is bullshit on this whole episode.
Yeah, on this whole
that
episode.
That guy just walks right under the bridge
he
and starts mouthing off.
And they didn't even bring Troy in until later. Like, I mean, I guess they needed her for the Romulans, but like when they were going to talk to the people as they were waking up, that seems like a good time to bring
yeah,
in Troy.
You've got an onboard.
No, but instead they bring fucking an alien, like a
yeah,
Worf, who
right,
has a
Worf.
Who has a different looking appearance.
And then they give him to Riker. It's like, okay, Riker, we don't, for some reason we don't have anything for you to do right now.
You're the first officer.
Babysit these guys.
But you were right about how LQ Sonny Clemens, he was the most relaxed. I like how yeah. the drug abuser, he goes with the flow. He's the only one that doesn't seem to give a fuck about being hundreds of years in the future.
Yeah, he's just and, like, what he's same same dance, different tune or something.
Yeah. I think it goes with the fact that he's a drug user. Because he's like, yeah, people with substance abuse issues, or whether they have substance abuse issues or not. But,
or whether they're just fun people.
Yeah. I think people with heavy abuse problems, they're sort of used to getting shit on from people, and they find themselves engaging in wacky behaviors, sometimes destructive, that can be fun, but it can also irritate mm-hmm. people. So they're sort of used to relationships and situations coming and going, and they've learned to have to deal with that early because they chase people off because they're just too crazy, you know? And so that's probably why he's just like, oh, well, we're in a different time period. I got used to losing all my friends anyways all the time.
He didn't mind leaving anything behind. Like, he didn't mind losing. The other guy was like, all of my assets in my portfolio. And the other lady was like, you know, her family, but he didn't have a family, or already lost him and didn't care.
Yeah. He was actually like talking about in the future about how, oh yeah, no one will remember my songs anyways.
Yeah,
so right. He actually used it to his advantage. Yeah. And he was like, yeah. And then Picard was kind of like patronizing him. I can't remember what
Picard. You never know.
Yeah. Because he was talking about becoming famous again. And
it's like, if they could have made,
perhaps so, anything is possible.
You could have an episode with the Frozen people and an episode with the Romulans, and then you could have done more with each story. You could have had a jam session between that guy.
Yeah, there wasn't
and
a
Data
lot.
On
yeah.
the fucking fiddle.
Yeah, all that guy. He's a fun lover. LQ is a fun lover. All he needs is guitar and some drugs. You know, and I mean, and using drugs. That's fleeting, right? Everything is fleeting.
What anybody needs.
And that also might go to explain his ease with Commander Data. He seemed to like really get along with Data.
He was really
into
Data. Yeah.
Yeah.
That young fellow.
He's like, this guy can't get aggravated. I can just be as charming as I want to this motherfucker, and he handles it just fine. Yeah. But a quizzical look on his face, occasionally talking too loudly.
But the using the comm systems, like, and Picard's like, people can are mature enough to be able to like not like abuse things that they shouldn't abuse, and it's like the guy was saying is like, just put a fucking key on there, and you know,
this is first season stuffy Picard,
and
he's still stuffy,
he's pretty tight ass.
And he was able to locate the captain's, he was able to just ask the computer where the captain was located. It seems like that's a security risk right there. He was able to waltz onto the bridge, and the whole captain's whole argument, like I said, was just like, oh, people are mature enough to know that they're not supposed to do that. Well, why have, I mean, the obvious question, and maybe this is too on the nose, but like, why have security in the first place? Yeah. Like, why have security officers?
The enemy boarding parties will understand that they're not permitted to go on the bridge.
Right. Yeah, right, exactly, right. I keep thinking back to that Ferengi episode for some reason when they, the Ferengis, those three Ferengis take over the ship. I don't know why I keep thinking that, like, one in particular.
There's always three Ferengis.
They're all like hunched over and going, Human.
Quark. So, yeah.
Well, okay, what about the other people? So we've got
Ralph Offenhaus.
Ralph Offenhaus, who, I love this guy.
Yeah.
The actor's brilliant. Looks straight out of Dynasty or something, or Falcon Crest. And
he's like a veteran actor guy.
Yeah, you've seen him a lot. And he plays this part really excellently because he is a petulant, rich piece of shit on the one hand, but he's still able to sort of insert some of that pathos from like a man at a time. Like at one point he states it outright through exposition where he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm freaking out because like I'm used to being in control. And Picard's kind of like, hey, you're never in control. That's you're deluding yourself. Mm-hmm. He conveys that even without having said that, he conveys that mm-hmm. in a lot of the scenes where you can tell he's kind of like a scared puppy.
Yeah, and I thought the argument he gave at the end when he was getting sent back to Earth and he's like, what do I do? I don't have any stocks. And Picard's like, you don't need money. You don't need anything. And there's
Picard saying like, you can go fuck yourself.
Yeah. Well, and so he made a point, which was, you know, which is a good point. It's like, what's the fun in that, you know? And there, and you know, in the future, the idea is you should be enlightened, I guess, enough to not need fun and gaining money and power. But
you can find challenges through other means, non-competitive means.
I mean, enlightenment, it points out enlightenment can be kind of like boring and stagnated, right?
Which, you know? I think is I think in certain philosophical traditions is precisely the assumption is that the concept of perfection is not something you'd necessarily want to achieve because it would be stasis.
Yeah.
You know, on the other hand, the argument that probably Picard was making, but I do think the dialogue was a bit rough, probably due to first draft status, is just conveying the idea that we find in the future, in the Star Trek future, we find challenges by competing with each other to see who can improve society the best, who can learn the most about this particular rock or shrimp. You know, those are the ways we challenge ourselves and develop reputations, and implicitly those are also the ways we tell other motherfuckers to go fuck off because they didn't learn about that shrimp, the Andorian shrimp before I did.
Well,
that's I got that sauce on there.
That seemed the Andorian sauce? Yeah, Andorian sausage? Or is it Andouille sausage? well, that seemed to be, if there was a theme to this episode, that seemed to be one of them. Because even Riker at the end was saying, you know, when they got left, he's saying, it's a pity we can't take them with us. He says, having them on board is like a visit from the past. And then Picard took a little fun musing and turned it into like this heavy analysis of their mission. He's like, that would take us in the wrong direction. Our mission is to go forward and it's just begun. Set philosophy, warp six, Mr. LaForge. You know, it's like, it's all inspiring and stuff. On the one hand, I watch it, I'm like, yeah, you're right. But on the other hand, Riker was just saying like, they were kind of neat to have around. Yeah, turned it into this whole commentary.
I think they had to shoehorn that line in because it was the season finale of the first season of the new Star Trek show. And the other thing that we haven't broached on, well, we'll get to this in a second. We'll get to the whole Romulan and what's going on there thing in a second, because I do want to talk about, I'm not remembering the character's name, the blonde woman who had the... What was it, an aneurysm or something? Or
embolism.
Embolism.
Okay. Are you talking about her character?
Claire.
Yeah, Claire, that's right. Sorry. Yeah, so Claire.
Claire Raymond.
Claire is really interesting because, as you note, Dan, first of all, Riker shits on her for no particular reason.
Right.
I mean, the two other guys, okay, I can understand being put off by them.
Being put off, like, on first impressions, but it's still kind of fucked up.
Put off by a nice homemaker, which Data has that hilarious 80s joke, is like, must be some form of construction.
Yeah, which is totally a joke for the audience, 100%, because Data, like, you know, is finding out all this other information about all this other shit that goes on all the time.
Yeah, QE2. I know exactly what that
is. Yeah, right.
But I don't know the term homemaker.
Yeah, exactly. So, whatever, that was kind of like, it was just, I mean, the joke, yeah, it was like a cheesy 80s joke with a weak implementation and premise. So anyway.
Then, of course, they have the stereotypical woman sees something scary and faints.
Oh, yeah.
So, right. You know, there you go. 80s feminism. The Klingon, in this case.
Cue silly music.
She refers to the head. Right. The guy with the head.
Yeah.
Oh, she's talking about Commander Worf. Yeah. Lieutenant Worf at this stage. But it is interesting that, as you noted, she didn't know she died. So she's coming from an even different perspective from these other folks. She didn't know she was going to die. It wasn't a terminal disease situation. And she has this bizarre, this goofy-ass husband, I guess. Yeah. It's weird. She's the homemaker. Her husband sounds like a complete moron. I don't know how he was making any money back in the 80s, because she was talking about how he could, like, turn a free lunch into, I forget, somehow mess up a free lunch.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Mess up a free lunch.
But
what was his name? Donald.
Donald, yeah, Donald. Her dumbass husband, Donald.
Fucking Donald.
She just kept talking so much shit about him. I love him, but he's a complete fucking moron. And talking about how the whole, you know, that she assumes that he froze her because then, you know, that way, you know, it's an understandable reaction. On the other hand, where do they get the money? I don't know.
Yeah.
A little bit undeveloped.
That
in
ain't
that.
Cheap, man.
So the character is meant to be, you know, she elicits sympathy from us. And I think she does a good job of that. But I still feel like there was some underdevelopedness, something missing there a little bit.
Yeah, she seemed like yeah, right. It seems like there was something almost there with her, but not quite, like they didn't.
Do you think it would have been better if they had decided to go for the triumvirate and just had a third asshole? Like another category of asshole? You know, you got the rich asshole, you got the obnoxious asshole. I don't know, maybe you have like the scheming asshole.
I mean, I guess you always need the straight man in when you have a comedy duo, right? So maybe
but that's Data. Data in this case could be the straight man. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just tossing it out there as maybe. I, you know, because I like the character fine.
Well, like, what else would, what other kind of fucked up person is there? There's drug users.
Maybe a murderer.
Murder. Just, a, just that would be, that would be pretty interesting, actually.
Or like a genocidal maniac. That like, would, like a world leader of a despot who was frozen, like some horrible, brutal, yeah. and they look him up in the database and it's all like, well, what do we do with this guy? So they, he technically died. He got the death penalty and he technically died.
The what? Oh yeah, the
brought him back. That could be the whole story right there. And the guy is like going to the holograms and killing all the holograms.
What's up with bringing people back? Dr. Crusher, she just here's some people that died, and then she's like, "Well, I didn't know what else to do." And I'm just,
yeah, yeah.
I know Picard.
Like, there should be some sort of inquiry, some kind of panel back at Starfleet headquarters talks about that. Because what the hell, man? Like,
maybe this is why this is the last time we see her until season four.
That's what did it,
or season two, three, I should say.
Yeah. So. Yeah, if you brought in a murderer, you would have to like make that episode a little heavier. And as far as this kind of this episode, all it really did was establish a Romulan presence. And this whole story with the three cryo people, it was almost filler. It was almost just filler because it didn't really establish anything. Nothing.
But it took
nothing
up the
changed.
Bulk of the episode.
Yeah, that's yeah.
The majority.
Yeah.
Right. Of it was the A story.
It should have been like the B story, but it was the A story.
And nothing got accomplished. Like yeah. Nobody really learned anything. Nothing changed. You know.
It should have been really. Mr. Moneybags, J.K. Simmons, and or whatever his name was, and then Charles Manson, and then Charles Manson would be all running around the ship, and then Picard would be all like, "Data, go get Mr. Manson." He was like, "Hey man, fuck you, man. Like,
you all have abandoned your children.
I'm so crazy, I'm insane.
I'm gonna pick up your children because you left them on the street."
So, what Data was like. They were trying to put Data front and center, but by doing so, they made him seem like this little eager little beaver character. He was super interested in
beaming over in the first place.
Yeah, he's the one who wanted to investigate. Curiosity is an emotion, and then. I mean, it is, but whatever. And then Worf, for some whatever reason, Worf just like walks into the door. I know he's expecting it to open, but come on, this is an old, broken, ancient. They already commented on how the controls are ancient. Like, aren't you going to test the door?
He checked the atmosphere after they already beamed on. He's like, oh, it's got a minimal oxygen atmosphere. It's like, well, why didn't you check that before you got
there? Yeah, right. Yeah, I didn't even think about it.
I didn't either.
So Data all gingerly opens the door for Worf, and then he's all excited and in awe over the cryo room. He's like, oh, and this is probably the most damning of all, is he refers to the ship as her. If you notice when he's talking, there's one line where he's saying he refers to the ship and he doesn't say it. He says her. Now, why would Data do that? Data would never do that. Data doesn't even speak in contractions. Why would he say her?
Maybe he's attracted to ships.
Well, once again, emotions, right? Emotions, that whole deal. I mean, I know this is a boring subject to bring up, Data, and like, well, that actually was an emotion, you know, because that happens all throughout Star Trek. I just thought they were particularly condensed in this episode. He wanted to save the people so much, he basically disobeyed orders, but not really, kind of. He was on the brink. But I thought Picard was uncharacteristically unsympathetic towards them. Yes. It was ridiculous. He goes, Data, they were already dead. What more could have happened to them? And he goes, well, they're alive now. He's all frustrated. I guess we're going to have to treat them as living human beings.
But that's what Crusher did. They didn't do that.
And it's like Picard is only saving their lives based on a technicality. It shouldn't be about whether or not they're dead, but like whether or not they can be saved. And so and so Picard is just being, it's just a weird technicality. It's like, well, they were pronounced dead. We can save them, but they're dirty. They're already dead. So, you know.
And part of the problem with the plot too is Picard's consistent aggravation with these people could be solved by him confining them to their very luxurious quarters, which would be perfectly reasonable given the circumstances.
So, yeah, those quarters, the decor almost reminded me of like my grandmother's house in the 80s. My grandparents, rather.
Well, this was filmed in the 80s.
Yeah, I know. But part of it also made me think of TOS for some reason, too. Something about it just, it wasn't as colorful, but just this weird sort of out of place decor. But that's just because, that could just be because I'm living in 2021 and it's like seems silly now. I don't know.
There is something I've noticed or observed or perceived. You be the judge.
You be the judge.
You be the goddamn judge, because this is a subjective thing. I think one thing that they had a little trouble with is that this is a show filmed in the late 80s, mm-hmm. and the characters they they picked up were from the late 80s. And even though the future people are wearing future clothes, and it didn't look enough different, right? So in Space Seed, in TOS, when they pick up Khan is from the 90s, and that's filmed in the 60s. So they dressed Khan up in 90s, quote-unquote 90s genocidal maniac clothes. So there was a difference, you know what I'm saying, between the Starfleet uniforms of the 60s and the 1990s clothes. Here, I think it's almost like the styles were too similar. So you almost keep forgetting that these people are from the past and they're not just some strange people that they picked up.
I think it's the hairstyles plays a big part of it.
I think hairstyles, I think the cut of their outfits, their facial bone structures, you know, for people who don't know, for our younger listeners, people's face bones were very different in the 80s for some reason. Scientists are still looking into it.
But
go back and watch some movies at that time and you'll see it. There's some face bone weirdness.
I was seeing a picture of the one who played the mom on Alf, and she had, I think it was the mom. She had the most ridiculous haircut, and at the time it didn't seem out of place. Willie, got any cat?
Thank you. Elicited that.
It's got
that response.
It didn't seem that crazy at the time, but now you look at it, it looks like somebody did a perm and then cut it all off, like scalped her, and then put a bunch of meat on her skull, and then put the scalp back over the meat. So
you'll have to do an illustration.
Yeah, it was just like too high up or something. But yeah, the hair, they were into the perming thing. And, you know, I think of Dr. Pulaski, for example, she had kind of a perm going on, didn't she?
Yeah.
A little bit, but more elegantly presented than the mom on Alf.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I went back to comparing Star Trek. Yeah, much more elegant than mom on Alf.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I didn't tell anyone that I went back to Star Trek. Claire's hair. Actually, I didn't even say it was Claire's hair. It was in my head.
Welcome to Claire's hair.
She had the bangs, though, right?
Yes.
Those fucking bangs.
Yeah.
Fucking bangs.
I thought it was a smart enough look, but it was
very 80s.
It was very 80s. Not as 80s as Tasha Yar's sister, which was actually a little later on, interestingly enough.
Data and Tasha.
Fully functional.
Fully functional. The music, you can tell
the music is hilarious.
It's because they have all these synth hits. There's these weird synth sort of droning sounds. Mm-hmm. And then a little you can tell when they get to the 90s. I like that they keep, you know, the original. It's funny what's evergreen or whatever, you know, and what isn't. Because like the Star Trek fanfare trumpets and orchestra, that stays. That's always sounds like
because
Star
Trek. That's the only thing that was orchestral through the first two seasons, where they primarily use synths, and then in season three is when they got a full orchestra. If my recollections are
correct, all these like tinkly synth sounds as well. In third season, there's all this more like
there's a lot of tinklies. But in this episode, they do straight up guitar riffs and stuff.
Oh yeah,
it's kind of insane. Like we're like, I mean, it was cool. I liked it, but it threw me. I thought I was watching an episode of Briscoe County Jr.
Yeah. So when Briscoe County Jr. Geez, that's a reference that only is like, how many episodes did that air for? Like,
I think 12 maybe.
Yeah, it's a show that nobody but everybody kind of remembers. It's like, I never watched that show, but
you gotta
know
Briscoe County Jr.
There were more Hercules episodes than Briscoe County.
Yeah. Oh yeah, hell yeah, yeah.
Yeah. When LQ says the low mileage pit woofies, which in the script spells it WOOFIE like woofie, but on the closed captioning, which I know you can't always trust, you can't trust either, it spells it WOFFIES. So the closed captioning spells it woofie. The script spells it. No, I'm sorry. God damn it. The script. I'm making this so much more confusing and boring than it has to be. The script. What I'm getting to is the script says woofy, and the closed captioning says waffy, but he says woofy.
Yeah, he says woofy.
What does he mean? Like a dog?
That's what I yeah.
Well, a wolf is often imagery for a sex worker.
But okay. So yeah, we had this discussion. I kind of missed out. Sorry. So after he said that. And then him and Data, I like, another thing, Data was all like fascinated. He was all, all like, you know, you're giddy about the idea of being his sidekick, his sideman. Like, that was another instance of Data being like, whoa, like this sort of eager little kid. Man. Yeah, he's this eager little kid through it. And I guess that's part of Data's deal, but
do you buy the fact that nobody on the Enterprise D has a guitar?
No, yeah, I don't buy that at all.
Because Data, he was all like, where can I find one of these? And Data was like, well, he's like, does anybody on the ship have a guitar? And
Number
Data
one's like, got a trombone.
No, but we can like replicate you one.
We can replicate you one with crazy designs and your name on the front.
Yeah, it's like everybody else is just replicating
that replicated guitar looks really used.
There was something weird about it.
I'm pretty sure it was just that actor's guitar, or it was a guitar they pulled out of somebody's dressing room.
It was definitely someone that's like anyone got a guitar around?
Hey, the key grip. He plays a guitar, doesn't he?
We can't use this. It's got all this crap
all
over
it. It's got a bunch of stickers and shit on it.
We gotta finish this scene in an hour. So it's like, okay.
There's a writer's strike on. This is Star Trek, goddammit.
So after he says low mileage pit woofy and then Data him walk away, they play some weird country primetime 90s sitcom music. Yeah. That's what it sounds like, 90s. It sounds like Full House or Family Matters, mm-hmm. except like country style on a guitar, mm-hmm. and it was fucking weird.
It was real
it
fucking
was really weird.
Weird
out of place.
This is a really weird episode.
It's a totally bizarre episode.
It wasn't it wasn't weird in the way that was awesome last week with DS9 when they see the big when the episode where there's one little ship where they're small.
Yeah, there's that Jerry Goldsmith style fanfare briefly. Like, yeah, they like
the trumpets.
Yeah, they go into a major key versus like the DS9 minor.
Yeah, and it's all shrill and awesome.
That episode was only goofy because Deep Space Nine wasn't that goofy. That episode isn't that goofy, like, sort of compared to other Star Trek in the big picture, like the shrinking down and like walking around.
It's the kind of another Star Trek show. It would have been a goofy episode, but because it's Deep Space Nine, it was able to make it into like a fairly serious.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
But the idea, they took an idea that's goofy and somehow made you forget it. And just
here they took a fairly high concept idea and made it goofy.
Yeah,
it's the reverse situation because the idea of finding three remaining bodies on a derelict ship. Yes, it's been done on TOS before, but the idea of taking that and moving in a different direction and focusing more on how those people are going to adjust, those everyday average people.
Right, and that's the thing. They didn't do that.
That's high concept, and there are a million different directions they could have gone with that. The direction they went, I will honestly say, it's totally entertaining. Every time I see this episode, I'm entertained. It's not like I'm like, oh, fuck this. Because it is funny. I mean, for me, it's worth the price of admission just to hear that Jiminy Cricket guy saying all his slogans, which I took, at first I was considering trying to write some down, and I was like, I can't fucking, it'd take too long of rewinding back and forth to remember half the shit this guy says.
But this guy over here did that, I bet you.
I did it for a couple things.
Yeah.
As it ended up though, the episode just was kind of like a snarky look at just some over exaggerated characters that they came up with in the 80s. There was fucking no point.
Yeah.
Well,
and there was no progression in
writer's strike.
There was the hints of a point buried in there.
Yeah. Hints or two.
That this whole Romulan thing.
That's the thing, is the Romulan thing was, that was the episode, that was the biggest thing we got out of the episode, is the Romulans are back.
They're back.
But
what was the thing that was taking out the bases?
It was some kind of Tomed incident or something?
No, the Tomed incident's the last time they had any significant contact with the Romulans, right?
Oh, yeah, we never, okay.
And was that the TOS episode? Or was that
No, that was something,
that?
I think that's a made-up thing that they, you know, they reference.
I want to know what you're going to say, because... I want to know if it's what I'm going to say.
This was intended to lay the groundwork for the Borg.
Okay, that's basically what it was planned.
But they had to rush the episode, so they couldn't put it in.
That's what I was basically going to say, is like they were talking about something bigger,
they're hinting at this mysterious thing that, what is it?
And even though they get back to the Borg pretty quickly, you know, in the next season, they change course. The original plan, according to Memory Alpha and various producers and the Star Trek Companion, the original plan that they were setting up here was that this would reintroduce the Romulans, but that then, as we do know in this episode, it turns out the Romulans' bases are also getting fucked up, and so through the core, they were going to have this arc in which the Borg are introduced and the Romulans and Federation have to team up to fight the Borg, which ends up kind of happening, and you know, the Romulans do team up to fight the Dominion later on.
For season finale, Like, it didn't leave me with any feeling of, like, intrigue. I was almost like, was that just a throwaway?
And we didn't see, which we do later, the impact of when we see a carved out, like, base, which we do see in future episodes when they actually get closer to the actual Borg stuff.
Yeah, the way Worf describes it like that.
Yeah, and the description is crazy. They actually visualize that later, and the impact is so much stronger, where you see just like this vast landscape that's just been scooped up out of it. And so I hesitate to say they dropped the ball here, because again, what the fuck are they supposed to do? There was a writer's strike. They were stuck with the script they had, and no doubt there were probably also the budgetary issues with the special effects that they were able to do. This is the last episode of the season. They probably had used up all the effects money.
So so you're saying they were supposed to have the Borg appear. They were supposed to show imagery of the station.
It wasn't that the Borg were going to be appearing. It was that the storyline's basically the same. So maybe
were there going to be extra scenes?
No, there weren't going to be any extra scenes as far as we knew.
So the story with the cryo people was still going to sit there and be worthless.
That was still going to be there. Yeah, and
it is entertaining, but it's also just like, why?
But the key point here is that this is the introduction to the Borg. We're like, we just don't understand it at this moment. Truly understand it at this moment. You can retroactively understand it later. The main problem, though, is that they don't directly revisit this story. It's implied. There's the implication from this story existing is that this was the first incursion by the Borg, right? But then they went and they did their own thing. They kind of went a slightly different direction with how the Borg stuff all goes down. And as a result, we don't really hear any reference to this ever until in Voyager they come across some Borg in the Delta Quadrant that are Romulan Borg. And
I think a lot of people presume
that that's a reference to this episode.
Bajoran Borg, Bajoran Borg.
In Picard, in Star Trek Picard, we do see some Romulan Borg. And the thing is that's, who knows, that could be referencing this episode, or it could be referencing many other encounters that the Romulans may have had with the Borg. So it's unclear. But they sort of drop this story, this drop references to this story, and then almost restart the Borg story later on.
Yeah, so what you're saying then, it was they more didn't follow up on it later, because if they were going to keep it the way it was, I don't know, maybe it's trusting the audience, because like I said, I didn't feel any sense. I know you're talking about later on, but I'm in terms of the season finale episode, I didn't feel any sense that there, I mean, they talked about this greater force and it's like, oh, what's the greater force? And I thought they were just going to kind of I didn't know actually that it was the introduction to the Borg. And so to me, it was just like, what was that all about?
Yeah.
And so
it's too under the radar.
Yeah, because I guess on the one hand, you could say they trust their audience enough to be able to follow a story. It's like, we'll just introduce the Romulans first and drop a seed about this Borg, and then we'll continue on it. But to me, I just kind of forgot about it. Mm-hmm. I was just like, that doesn't, okay. Because it didn't, you said it was too under the radar. It wasn't, maybe I just needed to be, you know, be smacked in the face with it more.
Well, because Picard, you mentioned
it makes me a simpleton, it's fine.
You mentioned Picard's final line earlier, and it is a good line for the season finale, particularly the first season of this whole brand new Star Trek that's trying to get acceptance by the fans and all that other stuff. So I didn't have a problem with the line, but you'd think it'd almost be better if it was more cliffhanger-ish, if Picard was like, Jesus fucking Christ, what are we going to do? There's this terrible nonsense that we have not yet resolved.
Yeah.
And the Romulans clearly don't know what the fuck this shit is either. And now they're being all up in our face about shit. So that's a problem. What the fuck's going to happen next season? And then you get all hyped up to tune in and see what is going to happen.
But instead,
there was one thing that was going on during the first season first couple seasons, really.
First couple seasons.
But especially during the first season.
First couple.
Roddenberry is still involved in the show at this point, before he's kind of pushed out. And he had an insistence among his many insistences. One of his insistences was that they really don't do much at all with previous stuff from the old Star Trek. He wanted to really differentiate TNG from Star Trek. That's one reason why they brought up the Ferengi, and then you have Q, and they have the Klingons in the form of Worf, but that served a particular purpose. But you'll notice no Vulcans. You really don't deal with Vulcans. Certainly no Andorians, no Tellarites.
Yeah,
right? The only Vulcan you ever see is Sarek, and then sometimes Spock.
Other than McCoy being, you know, on the front, there's, and they have, you know, models of the Enterprise A and stuff. Like, it's not like they're abandoning their heritage, but they're just not mentioning it. They're not having storylines tie into it. They redo whole scripts from the TOS, basically, but don't make real, only limited reference to the original series. He really wanted to keep it different. And the writers had to basically get special permission from him to even have the Romulans on here, because he was really resistant to that early on in the season. But apparently by the end of the season, he said he felt comfortable enough that to start slowly bringing in some concepts from the original series and start creating some more linkages. But just sort of an interesting look into the creative process of Roddenberry and what he was trying to do with this first season of TNG. Of course, you know, a lot of that gets bungled up in this last episode with as many deficiencies as it has.
Well, so yeah, when they're introducing the Romulans, right? What we've been talking about.
Marco Limo. Oh, hey, in his second role on Star Trek, because he was also in The Lonely Among Us.
The other guy, what's his name? His name is like T-Bok. Well, T-Bok was Marco Limo. And
the other guy with the cheekbones?
The other guy was T-H-E-I. He sounds like, his voice to me sounds like Nathan Fielder from the show Nathan for You and other things. If you haven't seen it, it's pretty funny. But
Anthony James
sounds just like him, except much more mean. So
he's all leaning forward all the time. That dude, like Marco Limo, was always leaning back and chilling, and that other dude was always like all leaning forward, like Jesus. And he was grinding his fucking teeth the whole time too.
So they establish these Romulan traits that we don't really follow up on, like in later Star Trek. Like, first of all, they will not initiate anything. They will wait for you to commit yourself. So counterattacks. Like, when has that ever been talked about as a Romulan trait? It's just such a, it seems so specific and weird.
And I think there's some measure of whatever to that in the TOS, but yes, kind of, not entirely.
Yeah, sort it seemed of, like just a way, because
seemed like a thing to say.
Well, because the rest of the crew, Riker and Worf and a bit of Geordi, they were all out for blood. Like, Riker wanted to fucking kill, and they were questioning. The captain, Picard, had to keep giving him orders, and they kept questioning his orders, and like that. After a while, I was like, oh, it's getting a little uncomfortable. You guys got to listen to Picard's orders, man. And Picard was the only one who wanted to like avoid it at all costs. So I guess it was just a tool for them to like have Picard wait, and then it's like, well, the way you beat them in this situation without violence is you just don't do anything, because they won't do anything. I don't know. But you're saying in TOS they kind of had a similar...
I don't have enough of a recollection. It's been too long since I've seen a couple of the core Romulan episodes from TOS. I'm just saying I've only
seen that one, the first one.
Maybe they, like, because there's Balance of Terror.
Balance of Terror, yeah.
A couple others. The thing is that I'm just allowing for the fact that maybe there's some sort of holdover lore. Maybe that's something similar to something Spock said or something. I honestly don't recall.
Okay.
Listeners, write to feedback@itsgotstartrek.com to set us straight.
Set us straight.
This is a new segment called Set Us Straight.
Do it.
Where do you guys get off?
Purposely make mistakes and sprinkle them into the show periodically, all for the express purpose to give you the opportunity to set us straight.
When we make a mistake, it's your job to set us straight.
That's right, Dan.
Yep. So another trait.
That's pretty good. I like that.
Thanks. Actually, I just said one thing based upon a bunch of shit Patrick said. I was like, yeah, I know, I'm pretty good, aren't I?
That's what you do, man.
I think that's how the world works, dude.
Yeah, right.
I'm pretty sure that's how the world works.
This is a new segment called How the World Works. It's a sad segment.
It's fucked up.
So another,
stay in school, kids, forever.
So another one, which is like, sure, it's believable, but it's so, okay, I'll just say one other trait they're known for, according to Troy, who is very astutely able to notice that Claire was profoundly sad. She used her empathic abilities to do that. Of course, you know, good old Troy. Good one, Troy. But anyway, she was saying Romulans are known to be violent. And of course, there's a lot of violent species out there. I always
like humans.
Yeah, exactly. I always thought of Romulans like always
Vulcans.
And this is going to be speciesist of me, but like Romulans always came off as more sneaky and conniving than violent. Like, sure, violence is a part of that, yeah. But you know, it's
it depends on I mean,
if you're into counterpunches, you're sneaky and conniving.
This is the semantics of the word, because you know, to one person, violence is anything that results in death or injury, yeah. And to another person, it's a particular color of imparting harm to somebody, yeah, through some brutality or something like that.
I learned from therapists that you know there are just so many words for different kinds of emotions. You know, like. Happy. There's like a bunch of words for happy. You know, you could be, you could be excited. You could be jubilant. You could be
ecstatic.
You could be, yeah. You know what I'm, and that's like,
you could be feeling good. Like Jester Brown. What's his name?
Leroy Jenkins. LQ Sonny Clemens.
LQ Sonny Clemens. Leon, what a ridiculous name.
Leon Ripley, or what is it?
Leon Rippey.
Do you think that when they were sitting there dealing with this script and they're like, we can't get anyone to fucking rewrite the script, do you think the main thing that aggravated them was like, who? Oh, maybe it was a typo. Maybe the guy accidentally typed LQ and he was just trying to say, because like, what is it? Sonny Clemens?
Yeah.
Sonny Clemens makes sense. Sonny Clemens sounds like a country music.
I just figured out who that guy is.
LQ Sonny.
He's on Deadwood.
Well, there you go. He's on Deadwood.
He's the saloon guy on Deadwood. I don't know if you've seen Deadwood.
He's got his teeth are all punched in. I just noticed that. He was one of my favorite. He was probably one of my favorite things about the episode was his character. He was really good. And for as sort of his superficial look on, you know, like supposedly negative characteristics of people in the 80s. They played his character, I thought, pretty consistently, you know, with like just how his whole personality is, mm-hmm, and him just sort of going with the flow. I thought that was a good approach. So that was a nice difference between when they first approached him was basically calling him a shithole because he's just a drug user. Just say no. Just,
and they weren't even entirely clear if it was drugs or drugs and alcohol. And I know alcohol is a drug.
He was definitely into the alcohol, and then he was asking for pills.
He was asking for pills, and they smacked her in the butt.
Yeah, oh yeah, that was weird.
That was the only bad thing about him, really, was the fact that he had no respect for Dr. Crusher.
But
and he made a joke about
he had respect for her, so he slapped her on the ass.
That's
some weird twisted.
Well, she was the prettiest doctor he'd seen.
He also made a joke about alimony, and everyone was like, ha, 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 like paying alimony, something about paying his wife alimony, and which is a little dated, I guess, just in the sense that...
That's pretty 80s.
Yeah, that is pretty 80s.
Yeah, but...
Dr. Crusher thought it was especially funny.
Yeah, she was...
Because her husband's dead.
Yeah. Yeah. She can't get any alimony from him, so
Picard
it's like
killed him because
truth.
Wesley is Picard's secret child.
So, yeah, she...
That's more of a child support situation.
She was talking about how cryogenics or whatever, cryostasis was a fad, and she's like, people used to be so terrified of dying. Are people not scared of dying in the future? Like, do people just not suddenly not care anymore?
The first few seasons of TNG had a bunch of ridiculous philosophical ideas.
Worf's not afraid of
dying. Yeah, see, Klingons are the ones that want to die in battle, and that's the best shit of all time, you know?
But they don't want to die. They just want to die in battle because if they're not in battle, then they feel like shit.
Yeah.
You know, if they just trip over and crack their skull open and they're just like, fuck.
They're just constantly worried they might trip over and break their skull. And back up skull.
Too much rectogeno.
So, yeah, the rectogeno. I keep thinking of like...
I spilled rectogeno on the rectilinear chips.
I keep thinking about them grinding up bats and squeezing out bat juice. Yeah, that's rectogeno.
It's not bat degeno.
I know, but it's like rectogeno. There's a character...
There's like
a
rack.
There's this enemy in this game Borderlands called a rack, and they're basically these dinosaur bat things. And so I keep thinking... Yeah, I should have mentioned that part, but I didn't want to seem... I didn't want to be like, video games, you know?
No, video games are cool. I think we all agree that video games are cool.
Yeah. I like Borderlands. So the one thing she did say, she said their belief in their own superiority is beyond arrogance. That's accurate. Fascination with humans for some reason. Okay, like some reason. They're just fascinated with humans for some reason. We don't care why. Is this an acceptable Star Trek like?
No, because what this is sort of the white privilege of attention translated through human privilege of attention. Mm. In the sense that it's like, oh, well, of course, we're special. Of course they're intrigued by us.
Right.
The Soviets are intrigued by us.
Europeans are so interested.
Yeah. It's, I say white privilege probably is more the American privilege because, you know, the Federation, I know they say humans, but problem with Star Trek, early Star Trek, Deep Space Nine helps disrupt this a little bit, as do later series. But the problem with Star Trek is that the Federation and Starfleet means America. And it means mostly white people, like mostly competent white men whose decisions are basically correct. That's the leading message through.
They got one
sort
black
of TOS and a lot of TNG.
They just didn't want to put it into words. They wouldn't. They didn't even admit it to themselves.
They didn't even think in that. Yeah. They're just literally the only perspective they have is yes, this America is cool. Federation is the Americans, and so the decisions the captain makes are the right decisions, even if they're contradicting earlier decisions he may have made.
Except for this one guy that's just hilariously Russian.
Yeah. The nuclear weapons.
He's more Russian than any other Russian you'll ever meet.
So the Romulans, they didn't think they needed permission to enter Federation space. They were saying, like, because Worf was like questioning their right to enter space, and they Thee or Ty or Fay or whatever.
It's a whole neutral zone shit again.
But then, like, he was saying Federation space, so they were saying, because they were like, well, to ask such a question implies we need permission. We do not. And so, they're talking about Federation space, which is beyond neutral zone. So all I can think is like, they were talking about how they used to claim all this space, and then they disappeared for some reason. They were basically like, for some reason, we disappeared, and you guys took
it was
it
like,
over.
We were busy with something.
So I guess they feel like the Federation took over.
They were busy
over.
Making those maze rooms where you walk around, you know, you walk along the maze, and then it makes you feel better in the head.
What? Like I don't know that last part. Are you talking about walk along?
That's
home?
From Picard.
In Picard, they had those whole, like, you know, the secret rooms where you have to walk along some magic maze, and then you sit down, and then
that's
fine.
Vosh, like, went nuts and.
Yeah.
So the neutral zone, what's the? It's free for all in there. I mean, and we don't know the difference between neutral zone and demilitarized zone. I'm sure there's a very obvious.
I
difference.
Think it's basically the almost the same.
And
thing.
It's just like the Wild West out there, right? Like, there's no law.
They're in. I don't think it's that. I think it's the opposite.
I mean, things are frowned upon.
No,
in the
I think it's.
Zone.
I get what you're saying, but I think in principle and what we're supposed to understand is quite the opposite. That the neutral zone is the heavily patrolled on both sides. That's why they have all these outposts, and it's all about. Yeah, but no one's allowed to fucking get in there. No one's allowed to do activities in there.
Except they're always both.
Except when the story calls for them to do it.
Well, there just happen to be some Romulans in there, and be like, you're not supposed to be in there.
Well, they just patrol their borders. Like, the Romulans patrol the Romulan side, and the humans patrol the human side, so they can commingle inside the actual zone itself.
Well, I think they're not supposed to go.
You're not supposed to go
in the zone. Like, neither side is supposed to go in the
they're
zone.
They're just not supposed to go there.
But again, and we
so Romulans just don't give a fuck. They don't give a fuck about the Federation's, like, established.
Well, we talked about this when we talked about the Survivor, I think.
Yeah, we did.
TAS, that there is an inconsistency in how, and there's the Romulan neutral zone, and then there's also like the Klingon neutral zone at times.
Crazy.
So there was also the Cardassian neutral something zone. Yeah, wasn't there? That was the whole Maquis situation.
They focused less on that stuff because it was more about the border switches. It's like, oh, we made these like little border,
was it just a border switch? Border or wasn't like a neutral zone. Okay.
Well, I think there was some zone of like agreement that they weren't going to fuck with each other. But they also had like an armistice. That's a whole thing. And we'll get to see more Mark Alaimo.
Hell yeah, dude.
Mark Alaimo.
When he plays Gul Masset.
That guy's really awesome.
And then later Gul Dukat. He is. I don't know if he's awesome in real life.
He might be.
I mean, he
might not be.
In interviews, he looks awesome in the sense of like, wow, that's a colorful guy.
Right.
As a friend or family member, I don't know. He might be the most wonderful. It's hard to tell how much of it is an interview act and how much of it is that dude's a fucking lunatic.
Yeah. Right.
I mean,
Gul Dukat did nothing wrong.
I mean, I think I mentioned this before, but he looks like he became a cigarette.
Yeah, he does. But here he looks pretty good under all that Romulan makeup.
Yeah, under all that heavy four-hour makeup.
He speaks very differently you can tell it's him, obviously. You can tell it's Mark Alaimo. He's just got too much of that characteristic. But he does have a Romulan vibe about him, a little bit different than his His Ducati vibe.
Romulans are such bastards. Picard's is like, we didn't, you think we attacked your post? And then all Mark Alimo says is, once we realized the level of destruction, we knew it could not have been you. So even when they're agreeing, he's agreeing, yeah, it probably wasn't you, dude. It wasn't you, dude. It's cool, dude. He was like, even then he's being insulting. They're being insulting, just saying like, yeah, we didn't, we saw how much got fucked up and you're not capable of that. So, you know.
Federation sucks balls. We're going home.
And fucking Worf is talking about like saying they're without honor or whatever. That was like,
yeah,
what was that? That kind of argument will fly on Konos, but not on a Federation ship. You know, it's like, we should get them because they're without honor. They don't have any honor. You know,
they killed his parents. Okay,
and even yeah, but I mean, even then, like Picard's like, you know, get your emotions under control.
They also retcon what Worf says here, because what Worf says here is that he killed my parents at the Khitomer.
A raid on Khitomer
when they were supposed to be our allies. But when the story is developed in the future, the opposite is true. The Romulans and Klingons have actually been at war for decades, or like antagonists for decades.
Like
at that
they
point.
Used to be allies way back. Somewhere.
And Worf's father, the whole condemnation or whatever. Why can't I remember this important Star Trek term? Discommendation.
I think it's a discommendation.
I think that's what. His father retroactively getting stained as being a Romulan spy, right? That, and then it turns out that's whole the Duras stuff, right? That is associated, I think, with why he, you know, died somehow there, maybe because they were like, oh, the Romulans didn't even care, and he was their spy, and they killed him, whatever. Anyway, so Worf's story here changes later, similar to the Borg thing, where they're laying the groundwork for some stuff that we do get to see in the future. But it's in a proto format that then they kind of reconfigure and retcon in the future.
So at the end of the episode, you know, we're supposed to believe that this is a cliffhanger about the Borg, but then also the people need to go to Earth. So they just dump them on the Earth. This exchange between Geordi and Picard, I didn't understand the logic. So they're headed to intercept the Charleston, the ship to Charleston, right? And Geordi goes, you know, Captain, I plotted a course to intercept the Charleston, but they've just informed me that they'll be making an extended stop at Arlof 9, which I guess delays their arrival.
Arlof 9, and man.
Yeah, and Picard, like me, I'm just like, Picard's like, your point, Mr. LaForge. And LaForge goes, well, at Warp 8, we could have our guests at Starbase 39 Sierra in 5 days, take months off our journey. What was preventing them from doing that in the first place? Like, why did the Charleston getting an extended stop at Arlof 9 make them suddenly able to, like, this other direction? They could have gone that other direction the whole time. So, now, is it, unless there was an admiral saying, no, you have to go meet with the Charleston. And so since the Charleston got waylaid, they were like, haha, the admiral can't tell us to do that anymore. But that didn't happen in the episode. So why couldn't they do that?
The only reasonable interpretation is that Picard did it on purpose to aggravate the people who had aggravated him by making their trip to Earth take a ridiculous amount of, like, literally months longer than it would otherwise.
He just waltzed onto that fucking bridge, man. He just like, where's the captain? Waltz on the bridge.
The captain can be found on the bridge.
Yeah, it's like, what the fuck, man?
Thanks, lady.
Yeah, no, security, you know, they go back and forth with that. People are enlightened enough to know not to, like, fuck with shit.
Everybody in Starfleet knows that you don't go on the bridge unless you're supposed to be there.
Yeah, don't use the comms. How hard is it to put a key in the comms? Troy has credentials. She enters when she, like, looks up the genealogy of some person, you know?
All right.
So apparently she has credential groups or whatever. I forget what they call those in Windows. There's a name for it, like the groups of authorization.
Authorization pods.
Yeah.
Affirmative.
Windows 95 authorization pods. Enter credentials. Errol's internet.
Super VGA.
Internet. EVGA. I used to have an EGA monitor.
I did too.
And then you upgrade to a VGA.
I played King's Quest 1 on my...
SVGA?
Which was lower, CGA or EGA?
CGA was lower four? Than... Yeah, CGA was... Yeah, that was like 480 by...
But like there was like four colors or something?
Four colors. And then EGA was an enhanced graphics adapter or whatever. And then VGA stood for very graphics adapter.
And then there was Super VG.
I was watching a I can't remember if it was on YouTube or not, but it looked like there was a lot of effort put into it. There was some production put into it. And they said, they were saying DVD, which stands for digital video disc. And I was thinking, that's not right. It's not, they're on this documentary and they specifically didn't look up what DVD stands
what
for.
What does the digital versatile disc?
Yeah. That's what it stands for.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sorry, I'm being like that person that's like, I read this obscure thing in the newspaper and
about
then,
another now obscure thing.
Yeah, and then I'm coming up to you being, did you know this? Oh, you're stupid because you didn't know that, even though I just learned it 5 minutes ago. I was being like, that's how I came off, but I was just like, you know, it's like if you make a documentary, you should like at least learn your abbreviations.
Yeah.
It's amazing how many Nintendo games had amazing translations. Like they were awesome. They were interesting. And I was always wondering as a kid, isn't there someone who handles that? But it just goes to show that so much of shit in life, like Sonny L.Q. Clemens's guitar, which was probably gotten because some crew member was like, we need a guitar now. Hey, you PA over there, get me your best guitar. That's probably why
Give me your best guitar.
That was, his name was probably L.Q. Clemens, and they probably added the name Sonny because the only guitar.
Because it already had Sonny.
The guitar they found had Sonny written on it.
You're probably right.
Right.
Totally.
So, and nobody knows what they're doing is the point I'm getting at. Everybody
it had
like,
dice on there and a rose or something.
Everyone who looks pro as shit, nobody knows what they're doing at all. You know, we're just, I don't like that fake it till you make it phrase, although I know it's like a good mantra to have.
Fake it till you are it.
But something about it like bothers me and I don't know what it is.
Or you gotta
fake it
too.
But you gotta fake it till you make it because everyone's doing that.
Say yes to everything, fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
Keep reaching for the stars. You'll get there one day. Odds and ends?
Boldly go where no man has gone before.
Odds and ends, ancient capsule from
Got any Earth. Odds and ends? Got any this is the way the world works or set us straight?
So, yeah, you set us straight.
Set us straight.
When we make a mistake, it's your job to set us straight.
Damn right. Ba-bum, ba-bum,
ba-bum. So there's an ancient solar generator there on with an old style disk drive.
Yeah.
A solid state drive is not technically called a disk drive. It's just called a solid state drive.
Mm-hmm. Because there's no disk.
Yeah, there's no disk. So
it's solid.
So why would they, maybe, although tape drives are coming back because they say tape drive, or they've already come back, or they've already rediscovered their use, which is they last forever and they hold a bunch of shit and they're slow to access, but they're good for storage, apparently. I don't know. Anyway, point being
that's
is that...
That's what my grandma always said.
That's what, yeah. Your grandma's a smart lady. But my point is that why would they use an old disk drive on something that's made in the late 2000s, mid to late 2000s, because that cryogenics works then, or cryo... whatever it is works
this
then.
Is the only time that cryogenics worked,
yeah, and so this obviously takes place even well in the past. It took place in 1988, didn't it? So they had
it doesn't make any sense
in 1988. There's, they had a satellite that was able to like cryo, because we didn't we never finished that cryo shit.
I thought it was supposed to be later than the 80s, because somebody said something about like 370 years.
So what was said,
so I was thinking more somewhere in the
By the way,
in the 21st century, something like
that. While Dan is collecting those numbers, I believe this is the first on screen mention of the actual date year 2364.
Yeah.
And so this is the date that is then used to orient all future. You know,
right.
Star Trek, including Enterprise, right? Everything revolves around this 2364 date.
Okay, so you know what? I got a fact wrong from earlier. I wrote
set us straight.
Now it's time for Dan
is setting us straight. This is an example. We're doing this as a demonstration.
This is what you can do at home.
We set this up as a demonstration to one way you could set us straight.
Yeah. So I wrote the comments down, my notes down, I read them backwards. The air date was May 16th, 1988. Okay?
That was 2 days after my 10th birthday.
Nice.
Nice!
Nice. Did you fucking get some mad pee?
Yeah, 10th birthday was tight, dude.
Nice. That was when birthdays still meant something.
Yeah, dude, it was awesome.
So 2364, and they said they died 370 years prior to 2364, which ends up being not 1988, which is what I said originally. 1988 was the air date of the episode. It's 1994. They're around 1994 is when they came from.
You got the maths, dude.
So maybe that's why they're allowed to say, oh yeah, you know, in 6 years, they'll suddenly have satellites where their cryostasis will work and we can throw them up. But we figured solid state drives out before that, so it's weird they would have hard drives. But I mean, I guess there's not one particular direction technology has to evolve in, so whatever. But yeah, the episode doesn't make sense.
The golden age of science.
Here's an odd and end. T Boone Pickens keeps talking about the Braves and how he bets they're still losing.
That's right, yeah.
But the funny thing is in the 90s the Braves were the best baseball team around. Right. I believe they won at least one World Series, probably more than that. But I'm not a baseball buff. But I'm not a baseball buff, but I do know that the Braves are doing well. Captain Sisko.
The people I know that were into baseball back then, they would talk about the Braves.
Yes. Yeah. There is a...
I don't know what the hell was going on, because I don't know what baseball is.
So, Picard, and I put these quotes next to each other, Riker and Picard, near the beginning of the Picard... First there was Picard. So, near the beginning of the episode, Picard was sort of, you know... trying to imagine why it would be the Romulans are interested in them. And then Riker gives his expert, you know, tactical advice later in the episode. They sound a little similar to me. A little similar to me, you guys. Something about it is a little similar. Uh-huh. So so Riker goes, and later in the episode, when he's given his strategic opinion, he goes, in my opinion, the Romulans want a confrontation specifically with us. Earlier in the episode, Picard goes, the general feeling at Starfleet is that they are seeking a confrontation. So, Riker, you're not introducing anything new to the... not bringing anything to the table. Riker also said, they know the Federation will send their best. That'll give them a perfect chance to see firsthand how far we've advanced both in technology and technique. Picard, near the beginning of the episode, says, they may want to test themselves in battle against a Federation starship. See how far we have advanced.
Oh, what was it that Peggy Hill says that in her opinion, the day after Thanksgiving is the busiest shopping day or something?
The busiest traveling day.
The day before. My opinion, the day before.
So I'm just...
I think she may have said that about... because there's an episode about the day that where they're on the day before Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. and there's another episode where they do the day after Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. So she may have done that both ways.
So Commander Riker is like Peggy Hill.
Yes,
he's just except and it wasn't common knowledge. It was just
Peggy,
what
Peggy and meatballs.
She adds a tablespoon of orange juice. So Riker was saying they want a confrontation. And Picard said the same thing. They're seeking a confrontation. Riker said they want a chance to see how we've advanced. Picard at the beginning said, see how far we've advanced. Like Picard is just sort of musing about what they could. I wonder why they could be here. And Riker's like, I've got it. I figured it out. I think you need to know this, Captain. I'm going to say exactly what you just said earlier in the episode, and it's going to be amazing. And I'm just saying, like...
And then Data is all like... it is based on this that particular premise, and if that premise is correct, then the strategy is correct.
So, yeah, well, I thought that was weird that Riker would just try to offer new information when it was Picard.
It's not good first officers.
And it's not just Picard. Picard is relaying initially at the beginning. Picard is relaying part what the the strategy buffs at the Federation think. Where whatever meeting he was at, he's saying like, well, they think that they're gonna. They're trying to be aggressive and try to start something, you know. So it's not just Picard's opinion. It's like the opinion of Starfleet.
Yeah, right.
So in that sense, you could be like, what would you do if in the position of a first officer? Be like, I don't know. I kind of agree with it, and they already said it. So I guess I gotta.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you could be more modest about it. Riker could have been like, you know what? I agree with the folks back at Starfleet HQ.
I think he tried to fly too close to the sun. I think that's what Riker was
to Wesley?
Doing.
Picard's secret son?
No. What? No, Riker was flying too close to the sun.
To Wesley?
The son of Picard?
For inappropriate...
No, Riker's not into that. Don't disperse Riker.
There was something that happened in my middle school with one of the teachers. I'm trying to remember the word they used to describe it. It was...
Jesus.
Oh, you went to Frost.
Yeah. Our middle school teacher got accused of some... Oh, yeah. You just doxed me.
Inadvertently doxed you.
You doxed me.
Inadvertently.
Nobody knows what that means.
Improprieties. They said there was some improprieties that occurred in the episode. in our school.
In the episode called Seventh Grade.
And because I was
episode six.
So I was so far behind, I was like, improprieties, I had no idea what happened, and apparently a teacher like was accused of molesting a kid. But
that's an unfortunate euphemism.
Yeah.
Improprieties.
So you know, LaForge kind of did something similar, except he repeated to the audience and treated us like we were idiots. Because he says the last time we encountered them, the Romulans, was decades ago, cost thousands of lives. They already established that the Romulans, we hadn't seen them for decades. Mm-hmm. So why is Geordi introducing that information again? The only thing that he introduced that was new there is that we didn't know it cost thousands of lives.
It's like they were just giving Geordi something to say.
Yeah.
They didn't have it was like they were working off a first draft or some shit.
Yeah.
He had like two lines.
See, yeah. You know what? That's a good point. Yeah, he didn't have very much.
It wasn't a Geordi episode.
That's a good point, Patrick, because they probably would have crossed out the first line about having encountered them decades ago and just kept the one about costing thousands of lives, because that was new information.
This does really read like a first draft, and I think it's important to note that for as many clunkers as there are in the first season of TNG, and there are some missteps and some goofiness and some ridiculousness, but they are by and large professionally written, right? So there's silly stuff in there. There's silly dialogue, yeah. But the story structures and stuff, I think are hold together much better. This is not representative of the degree of craft.
There's all kinds of silly
you would see
stuff
through the first season.
There's like she's talking about her kids and she's doing the computer search, and she's talking. Okay, they were both born in Secaucus. And then,
that's in Jersey.
Yeah,
Jersey.
We didn't know where fucking Secaucus was. And then she's like, she tells them the date they were born, and she gives like the month and the day, and then it cuts out before the year, and it's like, well, you could have put the year in.
I think the math guy was out of town.
Yeah, the math guy. Yeah,
you're like, oh, it's man, just, Johnny Math guy really is out of town. Lame. He's in the next studio over shooting Golden Girls. They got a lot of math on Golden Girls.
That was where all the script went, was to Golden Girls, apparently.
Yeah, well, you know, if I'm judgmental, I can free myself of all responsibility by just saying, like, well, no, I couldn't do any better. I couldn't do any better. I'm not saying I could do any better.
That's not your catchphrase.
I'm not.
I think that should be Dan's new catchphrase.
I
couldn't do any better.
I couldn't do any better.
This thing sucked. Fucking made me miserable. I couldn't sleep after I watched it because I was so pissed off at it. I couldn't do any better. But I hated it.
All right. Well, I think that'll probably do it for us this week on the It's Got Star Trek podcast. So do be sure to...
Doobie, you said doobie. Yeah,
420.
420.
420. Marijuana. Marijuana cannabis.
You sound worse when you say it like a doobie.
Ah, yes, I recall now. Do be sure.
My name is Do Be Sure.
Do be sure to write in.
Is that like JB Smoove's brother?
Yeah. It's his cousin.
Yeah, right. It's his cousin.
So
yeah.
Do be sure to send in any. What was the phrase? Set us straight. Yeah, you can set us straight at feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. You can also send us any questions, comments, concerns, personal inquiries. If you just want to, you know, send us copies of your diary to help entertain us between now and next week.
Did anybody ask us a real life question?
Oh, no, not this week. I'm sure they probably did, but I didn't check the email. but send in the email. We will check it this
time.
We'll
check it next time.
We will check it this time. I mean, we all go into sort of a state of cryo sleep in between each of these episodes. So that's why we're so high energy.
Why would eternal life be fucking a fad, you know? Why would it be having sex with a fad? That's what eternal life is. The secret of eternal life is having sex with a fad. Why would eternal life...
No, I don't know what you're talking
fad.
About.
I'm saying
fad.
Fad.
Yeah.
Like an
No. I still don't
fad.
Understand. I understood that.
What's the having sex
I don't understand I missed a philosophical connection there.
So when Crusher was saying that cryostasis was a fad...
Got that part. Understood.
And they were like... People were so terrified... Cryonics. Yeah, thank you. They were so... She was like, they're so terrified of dying. And it's like, so in the future, people don't care about dying. We had this discussion earlier.
Because they're all on, they get just like replicated, like morphine pumped through their veins.
And so
day,
they just don't care. Because I was going to say.
Or they all have lobotomies.
So like the thing that, eternal life, the thing that they've made countless stories about that that's been talked about since the beginning of time is how do you keep from dying? Mm-hmm. Suddenly, like, people don't care about that anymore. Eternal life is a fad, is what she's saying.
Okay, no, I'm right with you there. I understand all that stuff.
What did that have to do with what you were saying?
No, I didn't understand the leap to having sex with a fad.
Oh, yeah, because like, I was saying...
With the philosophical concept of a fad?
No, you're talking about metaphorically having sex?
Well, with? It was just because I said... So eternal life is a fucking fad.
Oh.
As I said fucking.
Okay.
So it's like eternal life is fucking a fad.
Now that's some...
I'm starting to get a little nervous about...
That's
like,
some
this,
very...
Repeating this.
That's some very subtle semantic humor there.
Yeah.
It just took us a moment to get there. Thanks to the audience for putting up with us for just working through that.
Thanks for setting us straight and back in time.
Feel free to write us a letter at feedback@discussstartrek.com. Alternatively, you can get us at social media.
.com.
So yes, at
socialmedia.com.
or also at It's Got Star Trek on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and you can find our stuff on YouTube, and you should go subscribe to us on YouTube even if you're not going to listen to the stuff on YouTube, because you know it's a fun little treat to see that subscriber number go up and you know, gives us a little shot of adrenaline.
Apple Podcast.
It helps us wake up from our cryo sleep.
Apple
Podcast. Each week.
When they woke him up, did you notice they didn't do the rule of three? They did a rule of four. They scraped off the first one, the second one.
The first one's name was IC Wiener. But they didn't include that because it was a rough draft.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
But yes, yes, Dan, I think it's a good catch that they didn't do the rule of three, which I think, again, is
Jesse
a...
Jesse just disarmed me.
I think that's another first draft
problem. I was waiting to put that in somewhere.
Totally disarmed.
All right. So, YouTube. And...
They found the person by the fourth one instead of the third, although it worked because there's two people doing
that's
it
first,
at the same time.
I think that's a first draft problem right there. I see Wiener. social media. Star Trek is cool. Follow us on social media to figure out, to learn what we'll be discussing next week, because we haven't been bothered to figure that out yet ourselves. But between now, when you're hearing this, which is a little over an hour after you first downloaded this, because you're one of those people, which right. is, you just listen to this shit right 20, away.
24 hours from now.
You...
Yeah.
Wait a minute, 48 hours.
You can look on the internet, follow us on social, go to the Twitter, and then we'll have an indicator.
Twitter.
An indicator that'll say we're doing this episode. Or you can go to the website. We should mention the website, which is itsgotstartrek.com, where you can, among other things, you can sort by series. So if you're only interested in hearing us jabber on about particular Star Trek series, you can go there and use the sorting mechanism. It's very straightforward. It doesn't require just minimal training. You'll figure it out right away.
Nobody says twatter or twitter. They say Twitter.
Why
or
would anybody
tweet,
say twatter?
Because they say twatter. They say tweeter. Sometimes people say tweeter.
Okay. Yeah.
That's a kind of speaker.
Yeah, it's like the little tiny speakers.
Okay. I don't think it has anything to do with that, though.
It's like a there's a tweeter and there's a woofer.
No, I know that. I'm just saying it in reference to Twitter.
Yeah, John Carlson Krebs liked he liked the woofers, the low mileage woofies.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John Carlson Krebs.
Clemson something?
T-Boone Pickens.
All right. Well, so I believe that will do it for us
Lemony
tonight.
Lemony Snicket.
Does that do it for us tonight, gentlemen? Can I get verbal confirmation from both of you?
Yes, sir. Totally.
Yeah, totes.
All right, cool. So we will talk to you again next week.
Star Trek.
It's got Star Trek.
Talk at you.
Duty calls. Hey, I understand. Why don't you come back later on? You and me will find us a couple of low-mileage pit woofies and help them build a memory.